Welcome to The Hidden World of Women, a podcast brought to you by Women's Health and Wellbeing Services. My name is Emma and I'll be your host for today's episode. For this episode of A Hidden World of Women, we're still on our journey learning about different occupations, and today I'm joined by an absolutely amazing woman. I'm joined by Michelle McKechnie. She is from Perth Doula Services, and I absolutely love the tagline of this. It's a labour of love. So Michelle is a mother of five. She's a grandmother of three. She's passionate about all things labour and birth. She enjoys fishing and fitness. And the thing that I love most about her bio is she's a crazy animal lover. And she's here to talk about being a doula. So thanks for being with me here today, Michelle.
Thank you for having me.
So you're a doula.
Yes, I am.
And have you always been a doula?
No, I haven't. I've done quite a few different things, but mostly in between having all of my children, picked up paid work which fitted in with their lifestyles and, you know, just family life in general. So we run a martial arts school in the hills, so I've managed that for quite a few years. My background's also in disability support, residential setting, and in education.
That is quite a diverse background.
Yeah. Sure is.
So before we kind of get started, tell me, what is a doula?
Okay, so you know, that is a really good question, and you know what, a lot of people don't know what a doula is, and so yes, I do appreciate the opportunity to come on here today to just put the word out there. And I think that those that think they know what a doula is, imagine a doula as a hippie, woo-woo, hairy, armpitted lady that attends free births. So yep. Look, we do have some out there, and they're amazing. But we come in many different shapes and forms.
Yeah. And so what does a doula actually do?
Okay, so a doula is a qualified non-medical birth worker or a coach who provides continuity of care in a physical, emotional and educational support to a couple during pregnancy, birth and the postpartum period. This can be in any birth setting, really. It could be in a family birthing centre or in a hospital. It could be at home for a home birth. So, yeah, so many different sort of places that a doula can work. So, yeah, that's pretty much a snapshot of what a doula is.
Oh, I've got so many questions just off the back of that one answer. Okay, so I'm going to start with the first part of that where you said it's a qualified non-medical support work.
Yes.
Like birth support person.
Yeah.
What kind of qualifications are there?
Okay, so it is an unregulated profession. So there are some doulas out there that haven't actually done any formal training, but there are a lot of organisations that you can either do the course online, mm-hmm. or you can do a bit of both. See, for the one that I did, it was a quite a lot of modules online, but also a two-week intense face-to-face training, which was amazing because it was a lot of hands-on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So with that, what kind of things are you studying?
Oh, so we're studying everything from, the business side of being a doula to contracts. You're studying the philosophy of birth, how birth works, supporting women in and partners and families in the birth space. You're talking about supporting in the postnatal period and, yeah, all of those things that are related to birth.
I'm going off on a tangent, which is so unlike me. Tell me more about the philosophy of birth.
Ah, okay. So the philosophy of birth is look, it's different for so many different people. And the philosophy of birth is basically your views on how birth plays out.
Ah, so is this sort of the idea around the arguments around the medical model of birth versus a more natural model of birth, that type of thing?
100%. Yes. Right. Yes.
Ah, yes. That's really interesting. Oh, I'm fascinated. Going back to that, what does a doula actually do? You mentioned that a doula can support people in a range of different settings. So that might be free birthing in the ocean. It might be, and the look on your face tells me, well, yeah, but I'm not your girl if you want to do that. For some doulas, it might be free birthing in the ocean. For others, it can be, a doula can be present in a highly medicalized C-section.
That's correct, yes.
What is it like now with hospitals? How accepting are they of having doulas in that space? Does that depend on the hospital?
Yes, it does depend on the hospital. Yeah. So we often say to our clients, just to double check first if they're accepting of having a doula in the space. So yeah, we do get a little bit of pushback, but what sort of I find when I've attended births is that I go in and introduce myself. I explain to them I'm not here to take over the medical side of things. I'm here to support and be with women. We're here to work together. I often say, if you need anything, I'm here, and let's work together as a team. And that sort of drops their guard down a lot and says, okay, this one's not going to come to tell me what to do.
And what not to do.
And what not to do. Yeah. And I have so much admiration for midwives and healthcare professionals in general. They've studied a lot longer than what I have, know a lot more than what we do. And they're just amazing people, but they're just so run off their feet and they're burnt out. So us working with them is really positive.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you noticed, how long have you been a doula?
Well, okay, so unofficially, I would say probably about 20 years in that sense. To explain that a little bit more, I was the first of all of my friends to have children. Yeah. So my eldest three girls were at primary school when my friends started having children. So I was lucky enough I could support them and pretty much a little sort of light the path for them in terms of what to expect. And I knew, being a mother myself, how best I could support them. Mm-hmm. So I did support them a lot in that sense. And now with my children having children, I can also extend the support in that way. So antenatally, postnatally, yes, in that sense. Officially, I finished my course this year. Mm-hmm. So it's only really been quite recent. And doing that course was great because I could top up on my skills, learn sort of some of the latest evidence-based information. And I feel like I can attend birth with sort of more of confidence now. So, yeah.
Do you think that, what did doing the course add on top of your experience of going in there and supporting women with your experience as being a mother?
I would definitely say the policies and the procedures that you're faced with within a hospital setting. Also respecting the different models of care, learning about the different models of care, how to support within those models. Certainly the business side of things was great. I think in particular learning your scope of work, because that can get quite blurred. Sometimes you can be asked to attend or to be somebody's doula, and you really need to explain to them that we are non-medical.
Yeah.
You know, we're not medical. We're not there to be a midwife for you. So learning your scope, learning where your boundaries are. So, yeah.
So when do you start working with a woman?
Whenever they call you, whenever they contact you. Some sort of might be later on in the pregnancy. Some might have just peed on the stick. So it does vary. I tend to like to have probably about 2 to 3 visits antenatally, so when they're pregnant, just to build up that rapport and that bond and discuss their birth preferences, how they envisage their birth to be, what would they like, what are their wishes. We sort of do a fair bit of, we like to do a bit of massage so they get used to our touch and sort of form that connection and that safety net for them. Generally about 2 or 3 visits, probably more from about 30 weeks onwards. Yeah. And then obviously we attend birth and postpartum, yeah.
And do you meet with both partners?
Yeah,
if there are two partners.
Yeah, if there are two partners, ideally we do. That's the best way, because I'm not only supporting the woman, but I'm also supporting the partner as well, in that space, because they do need to have a break. They need to learn. They like to learn how to support as well in the best way that they can. So, we working together as a team is important. So I do like to catch up with them as well.
And I imagine that it is that you would want to meet with them beforehand to make sure that everybody is actually on the same page.
Absolutely.
It's really hard to work as a team.
Yeah.
If one team player's over here and one team player's on a totally different field playing a totally different game.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
If everybody kind of sits together and you can go through, and as much as birth plans are awesome, they can totally go out the window.
They
can. It's nice if everyone at least knows what it is to start with, right?
Yes, yes.
And then, so then you attend the birth?
Yeah, so then we attend the birth. Generally, I'm on call from 37 weeks and have my phone ready to go and just wait for that call. And then we generally labour, you know, we're at the home for a fair amount of time, and then we head into hospital if it's in a hospital setting or we're at home. So, yeah.
And so you come as soon as labour starts?
Generally, it depends. I ask them to give me a call. Mm-hmm. They often say to me, when do I call you?
Yeah.
So my answer is, when you feel you need me.
Yeah, right.
And I also just like to remind them that they need me there for the
hard bit.
For the hard bits. Yeah. So the more rested I am, you know, just to bear that in mind. But, you know, sometimes I might go and check on them and see how they're going, how they're progressing, and pop back home, maybe have a bit of a nap or have a nap at their place. But, it does vary.
And then, so during the, I'm assuming that you're there during the labour,
mm-hmm.
like the tricky part of the labour.
Yes, yes.
And tell me what that's like. What is your role in that space?
Oh, so that space, it does vary depending on who you're supporting. I like to read the room first, mm-hmm. and see how, you know, let everyone position themselves. Sometimes the dad might be standing back and thinking, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
Or he, you know, he might be hands-on. So I'm there basically, I'm there to protect the space. I'm there to fill in those missing gaps if the partner wants to pop out for a drink or something to eat. I would then offer a lot of comfort techniques, show the partner how to, you know, things to do that might help. I'm there just to fill in all of those gaps that and be with women, because at the moment, especially in the hospital system, the midwives, as I said, are so burnt out, and then there's so many, you know, boxes that they need to tick that they can't do what they really want to do. So it is just really making sure that you're with woman and tending to all of her needs and making her feel safe and supported, and keeping that sort of fear down in the room and advocating, or not really advocating for her, but reminding her that she can advocate for herself. And
is it both? So when I was having my children, one in particular, I don't think I had the ability to advocate for myself.
It is a
strong woman.
Yeah.
You know, so.
It is a little bit of both. We encourage them, because often the healthcare professionals like the woman to say what she wants and not someone else speaking for her. So it is a bit of a fine line in, you know, getting your wants and your needs across. Yes, I will speak up if I need to, or I'll quite easily say, so what was it? Was it really that what, you know, you wanted?
Yeah.
You know, is this what, are you agreeing to this? And if they just nod their head or say no, then that's how we get it across that way. Quite often, you know, we have little cues such as if they're pressured into making a big decision and it's a decision that we've discussed prior and it's, you know, in my head, I know, well, I don't think she wanted that.
Mm.
Just reminding her she has time. Time to think about it. You don't need to answer this right now. You can have a think, and it might be a cue of my hand on her shoulder.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of thing that we do discuss, you know, in the antenatal meetings. Remember to take your time. I will put my hand on your shoulder, or I'll just give you, you know, that bit of, and take that time to make that decision. Yeah.
And so you were just speaking then, and I just got a flashback to a TV show that I shouldn't admit to, but I was just binge watching.
Yeah.
You know the TV show Bones?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there's a character in that, Daisy, who's about to have a baby, and she has a doula, who is probably one of the hippie versions that you kind of get the idea of.
Yeah.
And so the doula is very much controlling what that birth is going to be like.
Yeah.
But also there's no space for her to be able to change her mind.
Ah, right.
So I guess it's, how do you navigate that? How do you navigate when you've talked about something, and particularly with a first baby, you know, there's the fear of the unknown and then there's the fear of the known.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're having a first baby and you've got this idea and it's all going to be zen and it's going to be this and it's going to be that, and then the reality of it hits and you think, okay, throw the birth plan out the window and give me the drugs.
Yeah, yeah.
So how do you navigate having the space to kind of go, it's okay to change your mind?
Yeah. Yeah. So at the end of the day, it, as we said, we do put birth, we work on birth preferences and what people, you know, their ideal birth would look like. And yeah, sometimes there are variations to that, small ones, huge ones, ones totally, you know, off track. But the way that we, that I navigate that is firstly always say, look, can we just have a little bit of time? And we just have a small chat about it. But also respecting the fact that at the end of it's their decision.
Yeah.
And making sure it is their decision so that when, you know, after birth, they look back and say, well, that was my choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And I felt like I had the space and the opportunity to make that choice rather than it being forced on me.
And just that bit of time to think about it so that they, you know, possibly don't have regrets. And I'll back the woman's decision every time. And as long as they make the decision, we're there to support whatever decision that they make. Yeah.
Have you experienced it where, so we hear stories often where people go in and they want a natural labour and then, you know, obviously the partner can be male or female, but the stories that I've heard of have always had a man who's like, oh my God, my wife is in pain now, just give her drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going, I don't want them.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's the flip side of that where she's going, give me the drugs. And he's going, no, we discussed this. You're having a child-free labour. This is what you want.
Yeah.
Have you experienced that where you've had conflicting wants or conflicting opinions in the room between the couple?
No. And look, to be honest, I haven't attended many births because I've just, you know, obviously
just
finished,
starting
like,
on,
yeah,
that,
finished
yeah.
On that way. But with the birth, a couple of the births that I have attended, there have been, there haven't been any conflicting situations between a couple. Often she will be yelling and, you know, in transition and saying, I need everything, give me it all. And he's, you know, in protection mode, we need to get her everything that she's asking for.
Yeah.
But that's where I guess we come into play with our experience in the sense that this is what we talked about. This is does happen in transition. It's normal. Yeah. And just that often that gentle nod of she's fine. Everything is okay. And then they go, okay, well, I won't call in the ambulance right now. So if she wants the, you know, some pain medication, I said, if you want it, you ask for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So going back to the idea of being on call from 36 weeks.
Yeah, 36 or 37, yeah.
How do you cope with that? So you have a family of your own and obviously, you know, I know that your oldest child is 30.
Yeah.
But you've got five of them and there's grandkids. Yeah. How do you cope with just kind of your life being on hold because I could have a birthing mother at that time and I don't know if I can come to this person's birthday party or...
Yeah. Oh, look, it is probably one of the more challenging aspects of being a birth worker. It is what it is. We sign up for this. We take on this career knowing that it is going to be unpredictable because birth is unpredictable.
Yeah.
And look, from 37 weeks, I'm really healthy. I don't drink a drop of alcohol. And everyone has an Uber.
Yeah. So
it does work well for other people. For me, it is part of it, and I just make sure I go to bed early. If we have any commitments, I set up, look, I am on call. I'll be there if I can. But in my head, they are more important than anything that I've got on. Yeah. And my family are incredibly supportive, so I'm lucky that I can just sort of drop things and go at any time.
Have you ever used it as an excuse not to go to something that you you don't want to go to? Answer that, just in case.
To be honest, I haven't because often they'll say, how was the birth? And I was like, how am I going to explain this? But
I'm on.
Yeah, generally, I'll say I'm on call, I'll come, but I'll probably be leaving early.
So we'll come back to the birth part again in a minute, but you support families postnatally as well.
Yeah, okay, yes, so I do support postnatally. It is certainly one of my favourite parts of the birth space. You know, a lot of our women are vulnerable and for them to ask for help.
Yeah, it's messy.
It's messy.
You know, the first days, weeks, months after having a baby –
Yeah.
Yeah. Messy is probably the best word I can use.
Yeah.
In all senses of the term.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it certainly is messy. And, you know, for them to ask for help takes so much strength.
Yeah.
Well, what we're there for is to normalise the emotions, you know, the hardships and the challenges. Women think that they've failed, but really the system has failed them. And, you know, let's then throw in cultural norms of what is a good mother. Mm. On top of that, women are roadblocked, you know, like right from the moment that they pee on a stick, when really they should be honoured and, you know, the red carpet should be rolled out for them because of what they sort of have gone through.
Tell me what you mean when you say women feel like they've failed.
Well, they feel like they failed because they'll leave saying, well, I didn't, you know, I ended up getting an epidural when I really was hoping not to. And you know, this happened and that happened. But, you know, the thing is the system isn't the way that it is changed so much. And, the induction rate is 44%. That leads to a cascade of interventions.
Yeah.
And then they leave the hospital feeling like they've failed because they're booted out within about 6 hours, have no idea and think, I'm a useless mother.
So when I had my first baby, I had an emergency Caesar.
Yeah.
And it was an emergency. And then after she was born, every single midwife who came into the room told me it wasn't my fault. So they all told me, it's not your fault. It's not your fault.
Yeah.
It hadn't occurred to me it was my fault until the 12th person told me it wasn't my fault. Geez. And then I thought, well, clearly it is my fault because they're all making a big deal about telling me that's
not.
So, just kind of thinking, I get that. And But you're right, the rate of intervention is really
high. It's really, really high. And, you know, women, look, they're tired, they're exhausted.
Yeah.
You know, they've got sore lady bits and cracked nipples and all of those sorts of things. You know, there's physical, emotional, like hormonal changes just surging through their body and sort of, you know, throw on a newborn who is 100% dependent on them to you know, for every need. And then you've, you know, on top of that, you've got visitors popping in with like unsolicited crappy advice. They're absolutely just exhausted. So
you spoke about cultural norms as well. We don't see the difficulties of having a baby.
No.
You know, nobody talks about how hard it is. Nobody so everyone talks about sleep deprivation.
Yeah.
Until you've lived it, you don't know what that's like.
It's a form of torture. Slow torture.
It really, really is. But also, we don't see people breastfeeding.
No.
So, you know, when you're talking about people getting kicked out of the hospital, they're not kicked out of hospital, but they are
encouraged, highly encouraged to leave.
Six hours after they've had a baby.
Yeah.
When milk hasn't come in.
And
we haven't seen it. We certainly haven't done it before.
No,
so then, you know, what support have you got for breastfeeding? Yeah. All of those things.
Nothing.
You know, nobody talks about the after pains when you are breastfeeding and they get worse with every baby, just so you know. How you had five babies, I don't know.
I think it felt a little bit like endometriosis. But no, it's not good. It's not good.
No. So I guess that's one of the reasons that I did want to have you come on, because I think we do need to talk about that. We need to talk about all of the things that happen when you're having a baby, and because the more we talk about it, hopefully the less we have women feeling like they've failed.
Yeah,
absolutely. And the language that we use, you know, when we talk about a failed induction or
failure to progress. All of those things.
Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's fine. That's fine. So what doulas do and, you know, what I do with my ladies is that I encourage them to drop all the balls. It's okay. You don't have to, you know, don't encourage the bounce back. It really annoys me.
Yeah.
I was about to swear and I won't, but really, really annoys me, you know, that they feel that they need to bounce back, put on those bloody Lululemon yoga pants, have a ribbon in their hair.
The only thing is yoga pants are at least stretchy.
That's true. Yeah.
I'd much prefer you were aiming to get back in your leggings than aiming to get back in your jeans.
So yes, I tell my ladies that it's okay to drop all those balls.
Yeah.
And just to pick up one at a time when you want to.
Yeah.
And that's okay too.
I often tell new mums, so if you kind of think about where your standards are now, if you can just drop that down.
Yeah.
And then drop it down again.
Yeah.
And then one or two more times. And also be prepared that there are going to be days, weeks and months where you don't reach those new low standards.
Uh-huh.
You'll be fine.
Yes,
But again, we need to normalise that. We need to normalise the fact that takeaway is okay, or, you know, you might not sweep the floors three times a day. You might not sweep the floors three times a month.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
just try and stop your child before they put the dog hair in their mouth.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's a good day. That's a win.
That's exactly it. And celebrate all the wins rather than focusing on all the failures.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what is, when you're talking about that with new mums, how often do you meet with them?
As many times as they need. We like to, well, I like to catch up with them within the first week to give them that opportunity to talk about their birth. Some aren't ready. I don't like to call it, you know, I'm coming for a birth debrief, because sometimes they're not ready to talk, you know, to talk. So I said, I'm just coming over for a chat. Often if they want to talk about it, it pops up. If they don't, I leave it.
Yeah.
So in that case, I tend to, I like to do at least two visits, and I encourage them to book some more if they need it. I'm there for as long as they need me, because it's generally within that first week that, you know, the milks come in.
Yeah.
And we have that cluster feeding night, and they're like, is it going to be like this every, you know, for the rest of my life? And it's like, no, it's fine. This is normal.
Maybe it's just for a week or two. It's just going to feel like the rest of your life.
You're not going to know what day it is for a while. But
so that birth stories thing, I think that's really interesting as well. So when I meet somebody who's had a baby, I will always ask, how was the birth?
Yeah.
Now, some people are like, oh, you can't ask that because that's a really personal question.
Yeah.
If I don't ask that, who's going to?
I know.
We need an opportunity. It needs to be okay to talk about birth.
It is a tricky one because, most certainly a lot of the, I think a lot of the trauma specialists are saying things like, if someone's pregnant, don't say congratulations. We don't know that it's a happy event for them, But, you know, how...
I mean, read the room.
Yeah.
If they've got balloons up, you can probably say congratulations.
Yeah, that's right.
If they've got tears streaming down their face, maybe go, oh, what support would you like right now?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. So I tend to sort of say, how are you?
Yeah.
When I do my postnatal visits.
Yeah.
And go from there.
Yeah. So what else would be included? So you talk about the, you know, potentially talk about the birth story and have an opportunity to unpack that, debrief that, go through some of the decisions that perhaps weren't part of the birth plan.
Yeah.
What else?
So it all depends. Look, what I do and what other doulas do, sort of it does vary. I offer massage.
Yeah.
I always take some hot meals over because they're just the best.
Mm.
We just, to make sure that they're nourished and nurtured. The idea behind postnatal is to do all those things so that mum and baby can bond and have that time together.
Yeah.
But then in saying that, sometimes I'm like, please take the baby. I just want to have a hot shower.
Yeah.
So again, it does vary on the day. It does vary on what doula you may have. But, for me, I'll go and say, what do you need from me today?
Mm.
Because every day is different. So whether it is some newborn education, it might be, am I changing this nappy correctly? Why is there poo black? You know, all of those sort of little questions that...
Why does the boy's wheeze keep coming out the top of the nappy
and shooting me in the face? it could be a positioning with their breastfeeding. Cracked nipple. My nipples are sore, so it might just be a small adjustment to things like that. Any questions that come up along, within that first week that they're a little bit unsure about, that's what we're there for, because we are trained in that area as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So what drew you to actually becoming a professional doula?
Oh, yeah, what drew me? Do you want to hear this one?
Yes, definitely. I love the stories.
Okay. It was menopause, actually. Bet you didn't think I was going to say that. Yeah. So menopause.
I can't have babies anymore, so I help other people.
True. Well, menopause, it was like a death and a rebirth of who I am, really.
Yeah.
My youngest two can pretty much survive on their, they can keep themselves alive now. So
That was certainly
a good reason to sort of look down this path. I was actually feeling a little bit lost, and I remember asking myself, what is my purpose?
Yeah.
Yeah. I knew it was something sort of with babies and women and support, but I wasn't quite sure what it was. And, look, I didn't even know what a doula was until a couple of years ago either. I was seeing and hearing about the struggles women were having. You need to have a degree in advocacy, in psychology, in midwifery and birth education, like to navigate the hospital system today. So,
and you have to do all of that while incredibly hormonal.
Yes.
And sometimes in serious amounts of pain.
That's right.
Like, that's not the best time to be trying to learn those systems,
not,
right?
It really isn't. And sort of, you know, from what I could see, it was, you know, for the women, it was like a rack'em and stack'em situation where you were just a number on a conveyor belt in this, in a hospital system.
And like you say, there are midwives out there, and they became a midwife because they're so passionate about supporting women.
Yeah.
But they're so short-staffed and they're so overworked and they're so exhausted.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can't do the job the way they want to be doing the job either.
Yeah, and I do see that firsthand. My daughter's a midwife. Yeah. So, you know, often I would say, how was work? It must have been amazing. She goes, no. Mm. It's hard, Mum, you know, it is difficult. And, you know, I was frustrated with how the system sort of has mastered this power and ability to cheat women sort of their birthing rights now. And, you know, like you said, they're cheating midwives of the reason that they became a midwife in the first place, you know. You know, they just want to be with women. And the thing is that they're suffering, but in turn the birthing mothers are suffering because of it as well. You know, like I said, they're booked in for inductions, you know, for no good reason. Or, you know, they're put on a 12-hour time frame. Look, you need to have this baby. You're supposed to have this baby in 12 hours. And I'm saying, well, does an apple grow at the same rate on a tree? You know, no one – it's just ridiculous. And it's all because of funding, bed space – and policies and procedures. And who's suffering?
Okay, you're supposed to have this baby within 12 hours.
It is. You're supposed to dilate at 1 centimetre, did you know, an hour. So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's so that's why, so that's pretty much
and
why.
And anybody who's listening to this, that doesn't happen. I don't know anybody who that has happened for.
No, 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 definitely not.
No.
No. Yeah, so that's sort of why I became a doula. I sort of knew that my purpose with hearing all of these stories, feeling upset, getting, you know, trying to help out where I could, anyone that I could see that was struggling or affected in this space, because I knew that, I just knew that they shouldn't be feeling this way. So I knew my purpose was to interrupt what I could, where I could, using the knowledge I had in a positive way. I knew that I had passion, and you need passion for this job.
Yeah.
And I just also wanted to reduce the fear that a lot of women had around birth and provide sort of them with evidence-based information, you know, so that they can make informed and empowered decisions. Look, there's a lot of authoritative knowledge in the system, which, you know, it doesn't mean that it's true. It just has power, you know. And what's sad is that couples are led to believe that, you know, obstetric care is the safest option. And that was including me at the time when I birthed my two boys in a private system.
Yeah.
I'm not here bagging private system. Yeah. I just want to say, but things have changed a lot and people need to know what's going, you know, we need to know what's going on so that they're not caught off guard, I suppose. I don't know. I could also see that the postpartum period was being left behind as well. So much focus on pregnancy and birth and the important stages have been forgotten. And I wanted to disrupt that cultural imprint as well and, you know, support women after they've had children because I think I saw it mostly for when my two girls had their babies. I was just like this gatekeeper's like, don't go near the house. And I think I sat down people and said, now 25 minutes, take a meal, do this, do that, like, you know, no big deal. So I kind of stirred something in me there as well.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Like, I always think it's funny isn't the right word, but I'll use funny. That there's so much emphasis is put on pregnancy and birth.
Oh, so much.
That baby is going to grow anyway and it's coming out one or two ways.
Yes.
Regardless.
Yes. Yes.
So really, and I'm not saying that I don't encourage people to do all of your hypnobirthing and antenatal education, all of that, most definitely do. But then they have the baby.
Yeah.
And then they have this little completely reliant human to look after. And I was just at the hospital recently. I was dropping a relative off for a different procedure. And there were all of these new parents standing outside the hospital with just this shell-shocked look on their face of – what the do we do with
now?
This?
Like,
I am not qualified for this.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the reasons that we started our Preparing for Parenthood course is exactly that.
Yeah.
Because there's all of this emphasis on growing the baby, getting the baby out, but then nothing on how you keep it alive afterwards.
Exactly,
Or nothing around sharing the load or,
yeah,
you know, how you do basic things, mm-hmm, like changing a baby's nappy or bathing, yeah, a baby or, yeah, swaddling a baby. All of, yeah, those things,
all of those things
that we, yeah, haven't culturally learned.
No, we haven't.
So,
and also, what I like to do in my antenatal appointments is, not just talk about their choices and, potential interventions and should you have this test or should you have the other test and, what happens if they ask, say I need an induction, all of those sorts of things. But, yeah, so we also cover, I like to cover things like setting up for your breastfeeding journey or mm-hmm, if you decide you're not breastfeeding, what sort of bottles, are they recommending at the moment?
Yeah.
What sort of teats are they recommending? Partnership parenting in that, a big one is, I say, night three is usually cluster feed, or night two or three, cluster feed night.
Also the day that the hormones hit really badly.
Yeah. It's not good. And it's not. I sort of say, look, guys, to the partners, I know you're going to feel helpless, but you just need to sleep because this baby's going to probably be up most of the night and you're going to be needed most in the morning. So don't try to
There's no point
it really isn't. So all of those sort of little tips and tricks for them with all those challenges and the importance of the relationship as well, how to nurture that, mm, when you've got a newborn sexual relationship, how to sort of keep that alive afterwards and,
how to still connect with somebody when actually, mm, I'm all touched out.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And, and what that's like in trying to keep a relationship going.
Yeah, and it is. It's hard work. It certainly is hard work, but I think a lot of it is again normalising and letting them know that that what you're going through and what you're feeling is normal,
mm,
and it does get better. They do start sleeping.
They do.
They're not touching you as much.
They're not still in your bed when they're 18.
No, so. Well, you'd hope not. You'd hope not.
Yeah. So one of the things that you said is that you want to reduce fear.
Yeah.
So if there's somebody who's listening, and I know that we're supposed to be talking about how you actually became a doula and the road to that. So we'll get to that, I promise.
Yeah.
But if there's somebody who's pregnant right now or somebody whose partner is, mm-hmm, pregnant or daughter or, whatever that might be,
who
is pregnant, what would you want them to know to help reduce some of the fear that they may be experiencing?
Well, I think I'd first find out what happened if they had previous births, because it tends to be a bit of a trigger for a fear for the following births. I sort of say, look, when we're talking about, the thing is with fear, there comes pain. The more someone is worried about the is in fear, the level of pain is higher.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can keep the fear down and explain to them that this sensation, this amount of pain is good pain. It's what we want. It's helping baby move down. I guess it's a good pain. And you don't have to be a hero if you don't want to. Pain relief is there. But we're there to support you and get you through this. And,
I think that there's an end to the pain.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure I can get behind the good pain. I know what you mean, but I'm like, it's like when people go to the gym, but it's the good pain.
Good pain.
No, it's just pain.
It's pain with a purpose.
Yeah. Pain with a purpose, that I like. Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
So when you decided to become a doula, how do you then choose what is a reputable course to do?
Ah, that's a good question, because I did look at a number of different courses. In my experience, that I follow, I listen to a lot of podcasts and I read a lot of books, and I think what drew me to the course that I did, which was the Doula Academy and Vicky Hobbs, so I'll give her a little plug, was her lineup of people that came in and spoke to us face to face. We had a women's health physio, we had a midwife, we had another doula, we had a trauma specialist, we had a nutritionist, we had an incredible array of people that came in, and the references that Vicky were using throughout the course were people. Ladies like Dr. Rachel Reed, Sarah Wickham, and these are all gurus in the midwifery world.
Yeah.
And that, to be honest, is what drew me to this course. Was the her works come from?
Yeah, the reputation of the people who are associated
absolutely.
As well.
Yeah.
Because I think that's tricky, isn't it? Like, if I'm being particularly unkind, then I talk about some of the courses that people can do. I'm like, but did they get it off the back of the TV magazine?
I know.
So, you know, like going way back when on the back of the TV magazine, they used to advertise all of these different courses that you could do, and it was by correspondence. And basically you pay the fee and you get the qualification.
Exactly.
And, you know, what gives it – this is an unregulated industry, and I know that people are working really hard to get regulation happening. But you need to make sure that if you are going to do this, it's not Debbie who sat in her basement who's come up with this plan around what essential oils you should be burning. And I'm not saying there's obviously space for essential oils in labour, but there just needs to be more than that.
And
those kinds of things around communication and advocacy and assertion, you know, all of that kind of stuff and trauma.
The modules that she offered were incredible, but also I think having the opportunity and having a face-to-face learning and hands-on, you know, it takes a lot of work, and there's a lot of intellectual sort of material going into that, and the content was I just can't explain it. It was incredible. So with the hands-on on work and the face-to-face, you get a real. I mean, anyone can sort of tick off some modules and Google the answers, but when you're there, it's you're right there and in it. So
And the other thing is that I think you can have an idea around what something might be like. Like you can have an idea around what it's like to be in the room with somebody when they are at their most vulnerable. But then when you're actually in the room with them, that can be really different.
Very different.
So. I guess it sounds like it's really valuable to do that hands-on experience where you're working with real people.
Yeah, you are. We had pregnant women come through and, you know, we practiced a fair amount of techniques on them. And, look, just hearing Vicky's own personal experience as a doula and the stories that she shared, you can't get that online in a module. It was really special.
And what would you say you found most surprising about being a doula?
That's a good question. What did I find most surprising? How calm I was, I would say.
Is that the duck on the water?
Possibly. I don't know. I think birth is intense. It's certainly intense. There's a lot of emotions flowing. It's unpredictable. I was surprised because I love things set out. I do have a bit of OCD diagnosed. So I like to be organised. Birth is not organised. It's unpredictable. You don't know when you're going to go. So I think I was most surprised at the fact that, I could sink into it, and it didn't rattle me at all.
So that's not triggering for you?
Like, not at all.
That was kind of what I was thinking with the, you know, you don't know. It could be anywhere from 37 to 42 weeks. And you've been fine with that?
Absolutely fine, because I think the emotions and the importance of being and doing what I do totally overrides it 100%. So it's actually really good for me, medically for me.
Sweet.
It's a win-win.
Have there been any hard moments?
I guess I think the hardest moments that I feel that I faced is probably two things. Yeah, two things in particular. It would be, you know, you would meet up with a client and you've got to find your person. They have to connect with you, and you have to connect with them. And sometimes you might think, oh, yeah, no, that's great. That would be amazing. But then you don't hear back. You think, what is it with me? But it's important. And there's been times where I've gone and they've wanted me and I haven't felt that connection. We weren't on the same page. So that's a little bit tough. I think tough also when you're in a birth setting and you have to put on a lot of hats, and you have to, I guess, I'll give you an example. A lady I was with, she just wanted a lot of black tea, a lot, and with five sugars. And it was, the tea had to come every sort of 2 minutes. So I was sort of coordinating this tea, and one of the midwives said, well, you're not supposed to be having, you know, making tea here because, you know, confidentiality. And I said, wanting tea? And she said, well, you know, this is not the place. And I said, okay, well, the nearest place is probably going to take me about 5 minutes to get there, which is fine. I'm happy to do that. So if you don't mind being with my woman, my lady, and giving her all of everything that she needs, I'll pop down and get the tea every 5 minutes. And she said, oh, that's fine, just use it. And so it's just sort of being in that position where, you know, you've got to sort of fight your way through sometimes for things, but not cause too much of a disruption because you want that space to be nice and calm as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you've got to sort of play the game a little bit. And
I thought you were going to say that the midwife had said, oh, she can't have tea because she might need a Caesar.
Oh, no, no. It was just one of those, those things, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So flip side of that, what's been the best moment?
When the baby comes out. Hands down, I cry every time.
Yeah. It's that heart-stopping moment where you wait for the cry and the baby cries. So, do I.
I would also say, with my hand on my heart, it was when you have a couple and they're quite green and they're saying, well, I have to go and do this. I said, no, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do. But they're telling me, I said, no, let's talk this through. Let's, you know, make a decision based on this.
Yeah.
So building them up to have the confidence to make an informed decision, not a decision that suits other people and other time frames and timelines, and just watching that grow over the in pregnancy, and they're like, no, I don't want that, and I don't want this, and they become this strength.
Yeah.
And I think my biggest hi-fi moment was when a lady that I was supporting, the midwife came and said, now we need to do this, and she's getting a fair bit of pressure to do something in particular, and the lady said, just give me time. And I was like, yes. If anything, that is the most hi-fi moment for me, because she went from a place of feeling like she had to sort of hand in all her power in the beginning to, just give me time. I need to think about this.
Yeah.
And in that same birth, she said, you don't need to explain it. I know it. Michelle told me. And so she was informed. She knew. Yeah. And just that was from where they came to where they were. It was good. Yeah.
When I was having my first baby, one of my colleagues here was a midwife at the time.
Yeah.
And she said to me, don't ever call a doctor by their – don't ever call them doctor. Always call them by their first name. When you call them doctor, you put them in a position of power over you.
Oh, right, yes.
And you need to hold your power.
Yeah.
From now on, you are advocating not only for yourself, but you are advocating for your child.
You really are.
And that starts now.
Yeah.
And my eldest daughter's just turned 18, I still remember her saying that to me.
Ah.
And I had a very similar moment when I was having a labour with her, and everything started running. And I was like, you need to give me 2 minutes.
Oh, yes, yes.
But, it's been interesting how that has impacted my life since.
Yeah.
With kind of going, actually, no, in this moment, I'm the person who's making the choice.
Yeah.
I'm the person who holds the power.
Yeah.
You get to help make that an informed decision, but ultimately it's my decision to
make. Absolutely,
And I always find it really interesting seeing how people respond to that.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
So,
Yeah. Well, I sort of tend to go explain to them that, you know, in the beginning birth for birth to unfold naturally, it needs to be calm.
Yeah.
We need a dark and a quiet environment with beautiful endorphins and oxytocin and flowing. But with the medicalization of birth, birth's treated like a sickness now.
Mm.
And, it can go off one of two ways if you don't have a good support, like a good support team. I said you either hand over your authority to them, or you birth with your boxing gloves on. I said, so, you know, what? It's either going to go one or two ways for women at the moment.
Yeah.
It's not good.
No, and I'm not sure.
Not that I want to scare anybody out there at
no,
all, but, it's,
but I guess that's part
really
of
important to let people know that, yeah.
So the flip side of that is it's really important to have a good team around you.
Really good team. Look, if good birth education.
Yeah.
My tips are good birth education outside of the hospitals, outside of the setting that they're birthing in particular, because birth education classes are centred around what the hospitals are providing, okay? So outside of that, where they're promoting or talking about physiological birth and how birth unfolds naturally, and having an idea of that, I think is huge. Having a really good team, and your partner attending the classes and talking about things throughout your pregnancy and just learning, researching, you know. I think it used to be the case of, oh, look, I'm not going to make a preference or a plan and I'm just going to wing it and I'm not going to worry and see how it is. And you know what? Yes, 30 years ago, that was fine. I mean, I birthed 30 years ago at Kalamunda Hospital, midwifery-led care. It was incredible. They believed in a woman's innate wisdom to birth their baby. There was medical support there if you needed it. But they let you do what they knew you could do. And, it was a beautiful experience. But now, no, you need to be informed. You really need to know what you're going into because you're going to come out, you could come out broken. Yeah. Yeah.
And the hard part is you don't know what you don't know.
No, you don't.
So, it's that the unconscious incompetence.
Yeah.
And we want to move. And it's sort of, when you... Before you learn to drive, you're like, how hard can it be?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you start learning to drive and so you move into that conscious incompetence because you realise how much you don't know.
Yeah.
And then you start to learn so you get to the conscious competence. And then you move to the unconscious competence where you start to think, oh, God, was that traffic light green? So when you're having a baby for the first time, it's very much in that unconscious incompetence.
Yeah.
And so that's why we need a team around us of people who can actually go, here are some of the things that you do need to research. And I imagine that that's one of the benefits of having a doula.
Absolutely.
To be able to say, it's all going to go the way it's going to go.
Yeah.
But here are some of the things that you need to think about. So if you're faced with these decisions, you can make an informed decision.
And I think, knowledge is power. And the more you know, look, you don't have to take all of that knowledge with you, but you've got it if you need it.
Yeah.
And... yeah, I certainly was of the notion of let's just wing it and see what happens, but knowing what I know now, it's really, really important to upskill, to learn.
And that changes with each baby you have.
Absolutely.
I imagine from your first baby to your last baby, the medical system had changed.
Yes.
Over those years.
And one of the things I did learn that, the more money that you pay doesn't necessarily mean the better service that you get either too. So it all does vary a lot.
Yeah. So when we went around, my youngest baby is almost the exact same age as my nephew.
Yeah.
And so we did the hospital tour together because we were having the babies at the same hospital. And we went around and the midwife, and it was an expensive hospital, the midwife was saying, now, this is the bed and obviously the safest place for a birthing mother is on the bed. And my youngest baby is not quite 11. So this isn't going back 40, 50 years. This is still relatively recent. And I'm like, hang on. So I'm there going, oh, really? So we're not letting gravity help us out or movement and... what are we doing to release endorphins? Have you got Fitballs? What about baths? Any of these kinds of things available? Well, I suppose if you're into those kinds of things, and then kind of behind a curtain there's a cupboard and in the cupboard there's the dusty Fitballs and that kind of thing, but a really big deal of, oh, you're one of those mothers, are you? Like, yep, totally am. And all of, but I was like, there are how many, I was the only person who had previous babies. There are how many women here and their partners who are hearing that the safest place for a woman to birth is laying down on her back on a bed. Did we not leave that behind with Queen Victoria?
I know.
So I was making sure that everybody in that room knew that that was not the safest place.
Good on you.
And my brother's like, could you just shut up, Emma? Well, I could, but it's just not in my nature.
Need more people like you.
Oh, dear. So one of the other things when we're thinking about a doula, so I guess the two stereotypes I have is that the people who have a doula are either the super hippie people who are free birthing in the ocean.
Yeah.
Also, if you're free birthing, it doesn't have to be in the ocean. That's just the picture that's doing the rounds at the moment. So it's either that or it's the uptight, very well-off people who are paying an absolute fortune.
Yeah.
So what would you say to that stereotype?
Okay, so I would say yes, there are a lot of hippie woo-woos birthing in the ocean.
May never swim in the ocean again.
Yeah. Look, it all does come down to affordability at the moment. You know, from what I can see, the price varies, you know, a fair amount with what doulas are charging and what they offer. It's, you know, look, really how much you're prepared to pay for a beautiful experience. People pay money for a wedding planner and, a bouncer at a party because they don't want, they know how they want the party to go. They envisage this amazing event, so they pay for that sort of assurance. Mm-hmm. They're not doing it for birth at the moment. You know, some aren't doing it for birth at the moment. So, look, I encourage sort of all pregnant women to, you know, who necessarily can't afford it or think it's not necessary, or I could be putting that money towards something else. But I sort of encourage pregnant women to, you know, buy secondhand nursery items, secondhand, bassinets even, because you don't know how long, if they're going to even want to be in a bassinet.
Yeah.
You know, they might want to co-sleep, or, you know, they might, you know, buying a lot of clothes that you don't know if they're actually going to be in those clothes for very long. Seems as though there's a lot of money poured into setting up the nursery and all these fancy gadgets when they don't like it, because you don't know what they're going to like and what they don't. I mean, look, for me, the number of prams and the strollers I bought, and the one that I ended up liking was probably the cheapest one that I got.
And most of my kids were in a wrap attached to me anyway, because they were, clingers.
So I just sort of say, look, if you would like a doula, have a look at, you know, mixing things up. Buy, look at secondhand at things, put that, you know, invest that money into personal care and your mental health. That doesn't necessarily need to be a doula. It could be, you know, a women's health physio or a counselling session or a meal delivery service or a cleaner. Those things are so much more important and needed at the moment. A really good birth education class. So support yourself, your mental, you know, your needs, because babies don't need a lot. You know?
They really don't. And I wonder, I know we spoke about this in the beginning, but how much of this comes back to the cultural norms?
Yes.
How much of it comes back to we're comparing our highlight reel, other people's highlight reels, so what we see on their social media and Instagram, Facebook, and the amazing pictures of the nurseries and, you know, like, oh, well, this person's got a $3,000 rocker.
Yeah.
Really? Because I would... ended up feeding my baby in bed most days.
Absolutely.
So, $3,000 rocker would have not been a good investment.
Yeah.
So we're comparing our real life to their highlight reel.
Yeah.
And going, well, actually, my full-length video doesn't match up.
No.
Well, nobody's does.
No.
But all of those highlight reels are around, it's around the stuff. So how do we change it? So when we're having babies, we're less focused on stuff and more focused on connection and self-care and making sure that we're looking up, like, mental health in the perinatal period. We know that mother's mental health will impact the infant's developing brain.
Yes, 100%.
So whether that's, as you say, whether that's hiring a doula, whether it's looking at getting a mental health plan in place so that you can survive the baby blues or perinatal mental health issues, what do you need? Do you really need a $3,000 rocker?
So I don't know. I mean, I think it's a matter of just getting it out there and talking. And the more people that, I guess it's sad, and the more people that are affected by birth and the pressure of a newborn and the postpartum period, and talking to other women to say, hey, invest in, you know, invest money into yourself, into your own self-care. It's way more important than a fancy pram. It's just people talking, I think.
Yeah, and your pram doesn't need to cost more than your first car.
No, exactly. It doesn't, but they do.
They do, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's women's circles, you know, things, podcasts like this is amazing. It gets it out there. It's a, you know, generation. It's me talking to my children and you know, their children talking to their children. And yeah, I think that's probably the only way.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're listening, I encourage you to think before you make a purchase, do you really need what that is? Is there an alternative? And what do you actually really need right now? Because for me, it's a cleaner.
Yeah.
That's what I need right now. She's actually cleaning my house as we're recording this, and it's amazing, and I love her. She's beautiful. Prior to her, my favourite child was the robot vacuum cleaner. So, you know, but for my mental health, that's what I need.
Yeah.
Because I can't do it all. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think as, you know, the case of if your cup's full, then you can help and serve others and look after your baby, you know, well, if you're well. So, yeah.
That's exactly it. Mm. And seek support if you need it.
Yeah.
So are there any cons for being a doula?
Are there any cons? There are a few cons. Like I was saying, birth is unpredictable.
Yeah.
Babies have their own time frame on their own, and they're you know, it really is really quite hard to plan anything. You're not always welcomed by midwives or OBs. And birth is intense. It's emotional. It's rewarding. It's hard. It's many emotions all smooshed together in one.
Yeah.
And, if the burnout rate is reasonably high if you don't look after yourself. So what we're sort of trying to teach women who are, you know, to look after themselves, we need to look after ourselves as well so we can look after them.
Yeah.
So about... that would probably be about it with the cons. There's not a lot.
So I could honestly keep going on chatting to you for ages because I'm absolutely fascinated. But I can't because, you know, we've got to go home. So before we finish up, have you got anything else that you would like to add?
Oh, let me think. No, well, I think we've actually covered it all. We've gone through quite a lot today. So, yeah, I do really appreciate the time you've put out there so I could come and let people just know the support that is available and to tap into it, look after yourselves if you're pregnant and in the postpartum period. It's super important.
And if there's somebody who might be thinking about becoming a doula, what would you say to them?
I would say do it. We need more doulas. It's really important that we have a lot of support out there because I think it, you know, as time goes on, we're certainly going to be reaching out for them a lot more. If they would like to get in contact with me or look, there are some organisations out there. I can't vouch for them all, but definitely 100% the Doula Academy, Vicky Hobbs, who's in Maylands. Her training course was just outstanding. She also runs some amazing courses, back to basics birthing classes, which prepare for birth as well. So you can either contact me or have a look up for Vicky Hobbs at the Doula Academy.
Beautiful. And I'll pop links for Perth Doula Services and for the Doula Academy in the show notes, so you can always check them out there. So anything before we sign off?
Oh, no, don't think so. I think we've actually covered it all. So, yeah, thank you very
much. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. And it's always lovely to chat with somebody who's really passionate about supporting families in the perinatal period and making sure that we're supporting our mums and keeping them at the forefront and not letting their lives be dictated by rules are implemented for somebody else's benefit.
Yeah, so we need to honour these mums. They're amazing human beings.
We really do. It's a very important job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sure is.
Beautiful. Thank you very much for your time today, Michelle.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me for today's episode of A Hidden World of Women, a podcast brought to you by Women's Health and Wellbeing Services. For more information on the services we offer, head to whws.org.au or Women's Health and Wellbeing Services on YouTube and social media. Looking forward to the next episode where we uncover the hidden world of women.